I guess I get to say good afternoon, Your Honors. I'm Eric McCracken. I'm here on behalf of Terry Evans. This matter comes on appeal from the Court of Appeals, but it originated from a trial in the Circuit Court of the City of Norfolk. Mr. Evans pled guilty to two offenses, one possession of cocaine with intent to distribute and possession of a firearm while possessing cocaine with intent to distribute. It was a conditional guilty plea allowing him to take this appeal as to the ruling on his suppression motion. The general facts that were presented to the trial court in Norfolk are really not in dispute. That is the parameters. As most of these search and seizure issues go, the devil's in the details, and that's really where the argument, these facts are between the Attorney General and I lie. It's undisputed that three officers on bike patrol in Norfolk rode by an apartment building. They smelled marijuana, and they determined that the odor seemed to be emanating from a second-story bedroom window.
It was burning marijuana.
No, sir. That's what she says, and that's one of those devils in the details. The only thing that the police officers ever testified while they were outside of the apartment was they smelled the odor of marijuana. If you look in the appendix, it's in three different places, page 53, 56, and 73. Two different officers both testified. They said they smelled marijuana. They went back. They determined the smell of marijuana was coming from the upstairs window. When they knocked on the door, they smelled. There were three different knocks on the door, and the door being partially open on three separate occasions. They smelled the odor of marijuana. The officer who went upstairs said when he entered the bedroom, there was a heavy smell of burnt marijuana. And then he said, and I saw the cigar on the floor, the blunt.
Can I back you up for a second?
Yes, sir.
At the moment they knocked on the door, they've not made an illegal warrantless entry, right?
No, not when they knocked on the door the first three times.
Right. When the door is open and the mom is there speaking with them, and they announce to the mom, we smell marijuana and we would like to know the layout of this situation. Now the mom knows that the police are investigating an ongoing report of marijuana that they claim they smell.
Yes, sir.
Why isn't that
possible? Hold up a second. Didn't they say it the first time they knocked on the door? They said it the first time they knocked on the door.
Yes, sir. They knocked on the door. My understanding, and I may be incorrect, knocked on the door and said, ma'am, I think the first time was, how's this building laid out? They claimed to be confused about whether it was a multi-apartment building or a single house. It turns out this is one apartment. And, of course, they had an entry door and it's locked. I don't know why you would assume just in the course of business that maybe...
I wanted to get back to Justice Kelsey's question.
Yes, sir.
But I just wanted to make sure. I thought the first knock, they found out the layout and they told her they thought
I thought it was on the second knock, but I don't think it's really,
okay.
Either one. They did tell her at one point in time before they forced entry on the third occasion.
So prior to the entry, they said, we smell marijuana. And the occupant, the mom, knew that they were suspecting them.
Exactly. That's not in dispute.
What am I missing, Mr. McCracken?
Let me
restate what I'm thinking, and then you can tell me why it's wrong.
All right, I'm sorry.
There's obviously probable cause. There's no
doubt.
That's
not dispute. That was not dispute.
Right. I don't know why it's not obvious there's not exigent circumstances for a warrantless entry. We have case after case after case from the Fourth Circuit, from Court of Appeals, including cases I authored, that said that once the occupant of the residence is aware that the police are purporting to be aware of ongoing drug activity, burning, not burning, smoking, whatever, it doesn't matter, then their awareness creates the risk of them destroying the evidence, making the exigent circumstance mooting the need for getting a warrant. Now, what's wrong with that logic?
Well, I don't agree with your statement that all the cases say that. It's not what the cases say. What the cases say is, first off, you have to start with Kentucky v. King. I'm getting reversed. Basically, the Supreme Court in Kentucky v. King acknowledged that exigent circumstances under proper circumstances would permit a forced entry without consent. But it required an exigency to be established. I think the proper analysis is in the Ramirez decision
point of King
that basically
was,
is cited in the brief from the Eighth Circuit.
Hold up. The point of King. When I speak, you have to throttle back. Okay? The point of King was to say that the police don't create the exigency by investigating as long as they don't make a warrantless entry.
Exactly.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Well, they didn't have the exigency after making the warrantless entry. They had the exigency prior to making the warrantless entry. So how does King help you?
Well, what all King says is that they cannot. I mean, there was a line of cases that I think the reason the Supreme Court took up King was there was a line of cases in lower court suggesting that, you know, if you knew you were investigating drugs and you knocked on the door and notified the occupants that you were investigating, that might be a self-creating exigency, and they said that's not the law. As I was about to say, in Ramirez, the Eighth Circuit case that I cited in my brief, that is a full analysis of the exigency post the King decision about what is and is not. What is not is simply because you're investigating drugs does not, and the fact that you notify the people inside that you are investigating is not an exigency. There has to be something more. You know, first off, I think one of the things to be said about analysis on both of these issues is the Commonwealth bears a heavy burden to show that the exigency existed in terms of whether they can force entry across the threshold. And that, those are not just words, it means something. And the same is true about whether or not, assuming there was an illegal entry, it has to be something more than consent. The government has a heavy burden to establish that the consent that they obtained wasn't a product of the illegal conduct, not just somebody signing a form. And, you know, I'm in kind of a position here that I'm not accustomed to. I'm saying the trial judge got it half right. Usually they get it all wrong, but in this case they got the first part right and the second part wrong. And the facts are important. They are important. She keeps saying burning marijuana. No burning marijuana. The only thing that they said was odor of marijuana. These two police officers, and they, one logically, since we now give these officers a lot of credit about knowing what marijuana smells like, that if it was burning marijuana, they would have said so. They didn't say that. They said it was the odor of marijuana. Now, and
Mr.
they
McCracken,
didn't.
And on 55, isn't there at least the implication that it was burning marijuana? Now, prior to her stating that, this is after the mother says ain't nobody smoking weed in here. Now, prior to her stating that, had there been any questions about someone smoking? Oh, yes. When we first knocked, someone explained to her why we were there. So we explained we were there due to the heavy odor of marijuana that appeared to be coming from the area.
Again, that doesn't mean you smell burning marijuana.
But the question was, had anyone said anything about smoking? Answer, oh, yes.
Again, but you would get that same question whether they smelled burnt or burning. And there is a, you know, remember, the officer's the one that said a heavy aroma when he entered the room, not burning marijuana.
I'm sorry,
but
did you just say they would get the answer whether someone was smoking, whether it was burning marijuana?
When you knock on the door and say, look, we're investigating, we've got a smell of marijuana. And she, you know, if it's a smell of burnt marijuana, you get the same logical answer from that individual. Ain't nobody in here smoking marijuana. You know, whether it's burnt or burning. And there's nothing about that reply that suggests that the officer said, we smell marijuana burning in your house. In fact, they never said that. You know, the only reference to burning marijuana is a blunt that's laying in the middle of the bedroom floor. By that point in time, my client in his underwear has already been handcuffed and drugged downstairs.
Well, what difference does it make? You can't possess burnt or unburnt marijuana.
The point is whether, I mean, the Commonwealth, I think, is trying to take the position since it was burning, we're burning up the evidence. There's your exigency. And what I'm pointing to is that, you know, if it was burnt marijuana, it's already gone. Whatever's being destroyed in that process. The
so
woman
the
running
smoke,
up.
If the smoking of the marijuana is actually the destruction of the evidence, then you never have to have a warrant for marijuana now, do you?
Exactly. You've got a lingering smell. We can kick the door in. Come on in. And, of course, remember, there are a number of guidelines about what's supposed to be done. It's supposed to be a limited intrusion. There wasn't anything limited about this. It ended up with 6 to 9 police officers with guns drawn, dragging people downstairs and running in every crevice in the house.
But the exigency is not the presence or absence of any kind of marijuana. That is a probable cause issue. The exigency is that the person suspected of having the illegal drug knows that the police are outside the threshold of the door.
And again, what I'm suggesting, Judge, is merely because they know you're conducting a drug investigation does not per se create an exigency that allows you to kick that door in. And the other factors that have been in existence for a long time still apply. You know, it has to be a serious crime. Now, I know the Court of Appeals thinks a 30-day jail sentence qualifies, but I don't really think that's what the courts were talking about when they said this ability to go across the threshold with force is a serious crime, and they're talking about a 30-day jail sentence. I don't think that's what the case law stood for. It has to be a limited intrusion. There wasn't anything limited about this intrusion. It was a full-scale armed invasion. You know, you don't just get to say, look, we think there's marijuana in there, and when they close the door, now you've got an exigency. You would never need a warrant for these kind of investigations. It's a really bad precedent to start with. You're creating a situation that invites the law enforcement to engage in lawless activity.
But that's exactly what the holding of King was.
That is not what King held.
Police do not create the exigency by making their presence known and thus triggering the natural response of someone who's illegally possessing something to take it somewhere, to dispose of it or hide it.
In King, they were very careful to say they did not say there was an exigency in that case. They sent it back to the state court and let Kentucky figure out whether the exigency existed. All they were saying is there's been this line of cases that suggest that that's a self-creating exigency by doing that, and we're saying it is not. They did not say that because the occupants are now aware that it's a drug investigation, that it gives them the right, carte blanche, to enter the apartment, which is what I think you're saying, and I think that's just wrong. And once again, I'll go back to Ramirez. They talked specifically about this. Suspected drug activity in the motel room in Ramirez. Knock on the door. Defendant opens the door and tries to close it, and they kick their way in. And they specifically said, you know, you get what you get. Even though that isn't a self-creating exigency, when the police elect to do something, that doesn't automatically give them, since they're investigating a drug thing, a suspicion that they're going to destroy the evidence. That's not enough. Excuse me. The woman running up the stairs, the officer only observed that behavior after he had held the door open, put his foot in the door, and told Mrs. Evans he was coming in. So, you know, the only thing they have is exactly what Justice Kelsey is saying. They've got, we know you think it's marijuana. They got nothing else. They don't have any evidence that anybody's burning up the marijuana, flushing the marijuana. If you look at the cases cited, AG relied heavily on Cherry. In Cherry, the most telling thing is it was a burning marijuana, was a testimony. And two, she hollered their police, and there was movement that they heard before they came in suggesting an attempt to destroy the evidence. Didn't have those factors here, and those factors are important. Insofar as if you assume there was illegality, and I think from the evidence presented and the court thought the ruling in that regard, that the court clearly was not plainly wrong when she ruled that there was an insufficient exigency to justify the entry, then we're dealing with whether or not signing that consent form standing alone attenuated the taint of the illegal entry, and it clearly did not. Once again, they have a heavy burden. This court has said it's something more than merely consenting. And Harris is a perfect example. Their highway traffic stop was extended for about a minute and a half, and the individual with the state trooper agreed to let him search the car. And under those circumstances, this court said, that's not consent. He's still acting under the influence of the illegal conduct of the state trooper in keeping him there. Here, it really is an armed invasion. And these people are held constantly. The whole house is searched. They're never out of the police presence. The defendant signs the consent form after the officer releases him from one of the manacles so he can do so. After being told, hey, based on everything that's happened here today, we've got probable cause to go get a warrant. There, you know, when you look at, it's like everything else when you're doing totality of the circumstances. You have to look at all the facts. You don't get to cherry pick one and say, well, look, you know, this is a piece of fruit. And therefore, you know, that, you know, clearly that, you know, the consent attenuated everything that's happened beforehand. If you look at all the factors, clearly it had not. They, both the mother and the son, were operating under that very forceful and exaggerated entry by the Norfolk police force. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. I'm Susan Baumgartner for the Office of the Attorney General. Your Honors, there are two questions posed by this. First of all, was the consent voluntarily given? And then, kind of as a subset to that, was the original entry so illegal that it vitiated that consent? And the first issue, the consent, is a factual decision. And the court decided that it was voluntarily given. There's no reason to believe that that was plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. The clearest evidence is in your appendix. There is written consent signed by both the defendant and his mother, and that consent notified them both that they didn't have to give it. That's very strong evidence that it was voluntarily given. That's a pretty straightforward question.
Who signed the consent first?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Who signed the consent first?
I believe Mrs. Evans signed it first.
So under Georgia versus Randolph, there being no other objection at the time by any co-residents, that would by itself, irrespective of the defendant's consent, authorize a consensual search of premises.
I believe so, Your Honor. I know there have been a couple changes in the law recently about that. And I can't remember the exact status right now because I know they can't arrest him to get him away. But yes, I believe if he doesn't object, her consent was good enough. And she was never cuffed. And I don't believe any guns were ever pointed at her either.
And she wasn't the target of the investigation?
No. In fact, there was not really a person who was the target of the investigation. And that goes to the circumstances of the illegal entry and whether or not it tainted the consent, if the cops somehow manipulated it to get consent and therefore vitiating that consent. Now, there was some discussion about probable cause, and it was said earlier, there's no question that there's probable cause. However, the trial court, I agree with Mr. McCracken that the trial court was half wrong, half right, because the trial court seemed to think that probable cause was in doubt under a misapplication of the Bunch case. But I think under Cherry, probable cause was clearly there. As for the issue of the marijuana smoke,
what established a probable cause?
The probable cause under Cherry, if you smell burning marijuana, there is reason to believe that marijuana is in the location. There is probable cause for the location. And although there is some dispute, apparently, about whether or not the marijuana was burning, on page 59 of your appendix, when the officer is talking about going upstairs, he says, when we went upstairs, the odor became very strong, but it was extremely strong. The odor of burnt marijuana coming from the bedroom, Mr. Evans had came out.
Well, probable cause is not limited to burnt anything. If there's a probability, a fair probability, not even at a preponderance level, there is, in fact, a criminal violation occurring. It doesn't have to be drugs being used. It can simply be drugs being unused if you have evidence of it.
Yes.
So why is it burnt versus unburnt a big deal in this case, if it is at all?
Well, I think it adds to whether or not evidence was being destroyed. It adds to the exigency, although it's not necessary for the exigency. But I think the clear implication, based on what I just read, is that this odor of marijuana that all the police officers were talking about was burning marijuana, just as in Cherry, it was burning marijuana. And the question then becomes, was there an exigency? There was not merely the knocking on the door and Mrs. Evans not letting them in. There was the sight of the woman running. And in
answer Mr. McCracken's claim that the sight of the woman running came after the allegedly illegal entry.
I don't believe that's accurate at all. I believe
where point to the joint appendix to show us why you're right and he's wrong.
Different officers testified about holding open the door and the woman running.
On page 86, one of the officers says, at some point, didn't Officer Hathaway physically stop the door from being shut? I don't recall that. My focus is on the person running up the stairs. But it sort of implies that the door was already had his foot in the door.
Not necessarily, because Mrs. Evans had opened the door. And so one officer testifies that he sees someone running up the stairs, and then...
But it says on page 86, she attempted to close it right away. He goes, I don't recall that. Where does this lead us? He doesn't recall exactly when she tried to close the door.
In fact, look on page 88, it says, so you were, I had my foot right on the door frame as I was stepping in. Next question, so as you're stepping in, when you were able to see this individual? Yes, I heard footsteps and I looked up and saw somebody disappearing.
Right.
So it sounds like the running was after he had his foot in the door.
And also, let me take you to page 57.
Yes, sir.
Line 4, he says that because of the smell, we told her she couldn't close the door on us. And then the person at the top of the stairs took off at a full sprint toward the back after he told the woman at the door that she can't close the door because they smell marijuana.
Correct.
Okay.
But I believe it was essentially simultaneous. They were trying to speak to her at that time, and she had shut the door on them, and there was someone running up the stairs at that point. It's discussed, as we just did, 86 through 89, 56 and 57, and 75. And each officer has a slightly different viewpoint on it and a different order in which they
notice things. Can I read you the Fourth Circuit opinion on this subject? They say, quote, the police need not, as appellant suggests, produce concrete proof that the occupants of the room were on the verge of destroying evidence. Rather, the proper inquiry focuses on what an objective officer would reasonably believe. Since the police have identified themselves, the officer could reasonably include, before smelling marijuana, the officer could reasonably conclude that the occupants of the room would attempt to dispose. So the legal principle is, which King says is not precluded, which was the issue in King, is police do not create an exigency by announcing their presence, which would naturally lead to a reasonable inference that someone who is illegally possessing disposable contraband will dispose of it prior to coming back with a warrant.
Correct.
So does it matter if it's burning? Does it matter if people are running up the steps ahead of time? All that adds to it, but it's not necessary for it.
Well, I think also on page 56 of the appendix is when they say that for the first time Officer Gerardo is knocking, and this is the third knock, and loudly announcing it's police. So they do announce it's the police loudly when Ms. Evans doesn't answer the door quickly. And so at that point, once they've announced loudly, this is the police, knock, open up, we want to investigate, it does put us into that.
Well, if that's correct, would you ever need a warrant? All you have to do is smell an odor of marijuana, bang on the door, say it's the police, and then you would assume that there's an exigency, they're going to try to destroy it. You'd never have to get a good search warrant, would you? That'd be very efficient, but I don't think that's the law.
Well, I do think there's some difference here because there's multiple people in the apartment. And also...
How many people did they realize were in the apartment before the allegedly illegal entry occurred?
There were two people downstairs in addition to Ms. Evans, and there was someone running up the stairs. That is what they realized at the time.
So the person running up the stairs may or may not have been before the allegedly illegal entry, but there were
correct.
Two distinct people other than the one running up the stairs that were seen on number one or number two. What were they doing?
I'm not sure if they saw those people until the third knock. And that's at the same page as 56, 57, 75, and 86 through 89, where those are discussed. However, one thing that can't be ignored here is that this was a complex that the police officers were largely familiar with. And they were accustomed, when they reached this door within a building in the complex, for it to enter onto four other apartments. And in this one, it entered into one apartment. So even if they had wanted to go get a warrant, if that had been the plan all along, they would have had to in their mind, based on what they knew of the complex, go through that door to determine which apartment number corresponded with the apartment from which they smelled the marijuana.
That's true up until the first encounter, because they say after they tried the door, that door typically is unlocked in such complexes. That one was locked, so they knocked. She opened the door, and also, and I realized it was only one apartment instead of being four, and she closed the door in his face.
Correct.
So they knew of that after their first encounter, but it was only one apartment.
Right, and at that point, she knew that the police were at the door, and arguably everyone else in the apartment also knew,
right,
and could get rid of any contraband that was
right
in there.
And my understanding between the first knock and the knock when they entered, it was like over 5 minutes, right?
Yes, because the third knock, she was delaying her answer. She was not answering for approximately 5 minutes, the testimony is, on the third knock. So therefore, I think there definitely was a reasonable, they could reasonably believe that there was evidence being destroyed at that moment.
So anytime anybody takes a long time getting to the door, you can conclude that there's evidence being destroyed?
Certainly if somebody has just been at the door and slammed it in your face, you...
Wow.
They knew that she was there, and she was, it wasn't that,
so
maybe she was in the shower on a different floor. She was right there by that door.
Maybe she was afraid.
Of her son being arrested? I mean, possibly, Your Honor. There was marijuana coming out the front door while the police were talking to her. They could smell the odor while the police were speaking to her.
Well, you obviously can't go through the threshold with exigent circumstances without probable cause.
Correct.
Probable cause here is probable cause of contraband that's easily disposed of. So it's only in that narrow instance where the knowledge of the ongoing investigation and the police are at the door triggers exigent circumstances. And yes, the answer is the law does permit that.
I would agree with that.
And so is it your position that if an officer smells marijuana and goes to somebody's door, that's an exigent circumstance? Because I'm the police, I smell marijuana, an exigent circumstance therefore exists, and they can enter the property.
Well, I think that's where King comes
in. Is that your understanding of the law?
Yes, that if the police have not done anything wrong, they have not falsely created their own exigency.
Let me ask you this. Take most of these facts, and you've got the strong smell of marijuana, burning marijuana, and the police knock on the door and are denied entry. When would they have to get a warrant under those circumstances? Is your argument that after one knock and being denied entry, if you smell marijuana outside, you never need a warrant?
Well, I think under the case, current case law, yes. If you are outside and you knock on a door and you can smell it, and there are people inside who could easily get rid of the contraband.
Well,
yes,
the
I think that is
know
the case.
Your presence. You can't just bust through the door. But if they know you're outside the door, and that the police are aware of the smell of marijuana, then that's what triggers the exigency. Not without that, though.
I would agree. I mean, you do you smell marijuana at your own.
But all you're saying is they smell it. They knock on the door and say, "We're the police, and we smell marijuana." They got to do that right before they can come in, right? I mean, isn't that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And then they just go on in, no matter what. Never need a warrant for marijuana.
I think the case law, as the status is right now, suggests that yes, that is correct. However, this case is not that broad. This case involves multiple other people in the apartment who the police are aware are in the apartment. This case involves the delay of her not answering, of her falsely denying what everyone can smell, which is that there is currently someone smoking marijuana in the apartment. And I'd also like to just briefly address some of the characterizations of this search. This was not some sort of massive armed invasion of 9 police officers swarming in with guns. This was a very limited search looking only for people. While they observed drugs while they were moving through the apartment looking for this person who had run, who they never did locate, they were only looking under beds in closets where a person could be hiding. They weren't, it was not some sort of massive search. They waited until they gained consent to go back in and look for it. And there were not nine officers swarming, I think might have been the characterization. There were backup officers who showed up eventually, and one of the original officers went upstairs. But it was originally just three officers at the door trying to figure out where the marijuana smoke was coming from. If there are no further questions, I urge you to affirm.
The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
All rise.